This is episode 10. Man, I'm very excited about that. Thanks for listening. This is going to be Andy Porter. He's a photographer out of the Skagit County area. He loves photographing the North Cascades, like the National Park area up there. He's been out on the coast. He's really been a lot of different places. He also does some stuff inside the town, and but he's a backpacking photographer for sure. So we're going to talk a lot about that. Check it out. This is the Cascade Hiker Podcast. You're going to find out all the aspects of hiking in our beautiful Pacific Northwest woods.
I'm a country boy with a soft side. My heart wanders up north to the hillside. And I've never met anyone quite as beautiful as you.
Check us out over at CascadeHikerPodcast.com. That's right, CascadeHikerPodcast.com. That's where you're going to find all the show notes and links right there.
Enigmatic like that of the cosmos. Never held your hand.
I want to thank Whiskey Fever for letting me use that awesome track there. That was Tall Grass off their album, Gonna Wake Up This Whole Town. Find them at ReverbNation.com/Whiskey Fever. They're from Cedro Woolley. Go check them out. I'm your host, Rudy Getzik. I put this podcast together to inspire you to get out on the trail. Are you putting in 2-mile hikes, 5-mile hikes? You sitting on the couch? Have you even gone on a backpacking trip yet? I'm going to introduce you to some folks that have done that and a whole lot more. So without further ado, here is the Cascade Hiker Podcast. Okay, next on the Cascade Hiker Podcast, what's your name and where are you from?
My name is Andy Porter. I live in Cedro Woolley, Washington.
Yeah, I think I met you once in Cedro Woolley. Actually, it was Clear Lake there, but awesome. And so you're on the podcast today because you are an amazing photographer. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Well, thank you very much. It's, photography's always been a passion of mine. I really just love getting out, taking pictures. I don't know which part I like more, the getting out more or the taking pictures more, but living here in the northwest part of Washington State is just heaven for me because there's just an infinity of beautiful places to go take pictures.
Yeah, for sure. And, just for people that don't know you that well or know your stuff, you do get out and you do some major hikes with your photography, right?
Yeah, I've hiked pretty much every trail in the North Cascade National Park, several of them many times, like, for example, the Sahali Glacier Camp and places like that. And, I've done a lot of trail hiking in the Pasayan Wilderness, the Glacier Peak Wilderness, done the Enchantments a few times. And, I keep thinking that I'm going to go further afield and maybe go to some other state or some other part of Washington. But there's just so many gorgeous trails and places to see here in the North Cascades that I often don't get very far.
Yeah, well, and the different seasons, too, can change the atmosphere, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw you went up to Sahali with my friend Stacy last year.
Oh, gosh, yeah, Stacy. So we went up there, got some really fantastic shots up at Sahali Glacier Camp of the Milky Way over the tent and all that stuff. And, God, that was a lot of fun. We had a great time up there. She was with two of her friends that had really never been backpacking before. And so it was kind of a little bit of a steep gradient, no pun intended, to take them up to the Sahali camp for their first backpacking trip. But they were troopers. They did great. They made it up there. They were kind of cursing me a tiny bit when we got to that last part where you scramble up to the camp. But when they got up there, their jaws just hit the rocks, man. They couldn't believe, how beautiful it was.
That's amazing. And tell me now, so you sell all your stuff, right?
Yeah, I'm a full-time photographer. I work for different magazines. I do stuff with the National Park Service, Forest Service, and lots of conservation groups like the Washington Wilderness Coalition and the Sierra Club and so forth. Donate my pictures to them. And so I teach a lot of classes. So I have photography classes that I teach from Bellingham down to Marysville, different parks and recreations. And I do outdoor photography tours where we go out and show people how to take pictures of the tulips, of the night sky, of the North Cascades. We have overnight hikes, drive-in hikes, and photo tours. And so it just keeps me busy. I love it. And, I'm getting all geared up now because, the weather's warm. Snow's starting to melt, and I'm getting pretty excited about getting back up to the high country.
That's great. And that's really cool, too, for the people that like your photography, because you are a very reachable person.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm always surprised when, you know, I talk to people from different, you know, groups or and so forth, and I'm offering to share my images, and they're sometimes surprised. You know, I've heard that some other photographers may be a little less willing to share the pictures, and for me, you know, it's I love the Northwest. I love Skagit County. I love the North Cascades, and I love promoting them. I love helping groups that promote them. I've done a lot of work, for example, with Cascade Loop magazine, so they get to use my images for free, and you know, it's just a cool thing. And then, of course, you know, for me, you know, you get coverage, you get promotion, you get your name out there, and it's all good.
Yeah, for sure. And then obviously people can buy your product online too, but you're also, I've seen you out at some different events too, right?
Yeah, sometimes I go out and I do different events, and I'll, you know, I do stuff with my son, plays different sports. I'll do events with him, and then I'll go to events for the, you know, the Chamber of Commerce for Mount Vernon or Burlington, Cedro Woolley, different organizations like that, and get out and take pictures for them. And, you know, it's so fun. I've done a lot of stuff with the parades, and I do the Logger Rodeo in Cedro Woolley with the carnival, and it's just fun to take pictures. Anything that has bright colors, you can sign me up.
That's good. Oh, man. And so tell me, I've got a personal question. So if I'm a guy that only takes pictures with my iPhone and I'm thinking about upgrading my system, you know, what would you recommend for somebody like me?
Well, I mean, both Canon and Nikon have entry level, you know, DSLR camera packages that they sell. DSLR is the, you know, digital single lens reflex camera, the one that you can change the lenses on. And, you know, depending upon, I mean, Costco will have packages of Nikon and Canon DSLR, you know, sort of entry level packages. And, you know, they can range anywhere from, you know, $400 to $700, and get a pretty nice rig, and it's a great way to get started. I started taking pictures with a camera like that. In fact, some of the first magazines that contacted me to use my pictures, you know, I had taken with a basic, you know, DSLR, and you don't need a lot of fancy stuff to get out there and take cool pictures. You know, half of it, at least for me, maybe more than half of it, is just getting out to cool places. You know, I mean, if you're going to go to some place for the sunrise or the sunset, even if it's the tulip fields or Deception Pass, you know, you can get great pictures with a basic camera. And as I, you know, improved my camera skills and learned more about, you know, lenses and different things, then I slowly upgraded. But I've always been an equipment minimalist. I still don't have, you know, a super expensive camera. I have two lenses. I only got the second lens about a year and a half ago, really just so I could take night sky pictures. I have a wide-angle lens. And so, you know, you don't need to have a lot of fancy, expensive stuff to take cool pictures and sell them and all that stuff. So I'd say, you know, just get started with a basic DSLR, something that you can set on manual mode so you can adjust your aperture and shutter speed manually. And then, you know, you're ready to roll.
That's great. And what about as far as if somebody didn't get a package, they just got the standard DSLR, what would be the one upgrade you would recommend right away?
Well, I would definitely recommend getting a better lens. You know, the kit lenses that come with the Canon and Nikon are okay, but, you know, they're certainly okay to get started with. But for me, when I had my, you know, entry-level DSLR, I got had a 15 millimeter to 85 millimeter zoom lens that went with it, that I got with it, that cost a little more than the camera and the kit lens combined. But, you know, the better lens for the body really helped a lot for me. And so that would be my main recommendation for an upgrade, would be to get a better lens that suits, you know, the kind of thing that you're planning to shoot. You know, some people like to go and take pictures of birds, eagles, owls, and stuff. And you know, for a thing like that, you definitely need a good long lens, you know, that can really zoom in from a far distance. And, you know, for me, I'm doing landscapes, and so having more of a wide-angle lens, you know, was a real benefit for me. So, you know, you kind of got to see, you know, what direction you're thinking of going in terms of what you want to, you know, really sort of focus on in terms of your subject, and then go from there.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. And then, of course, signing up for one of your classes would probably be highly recommended too, right?
Well, the classes I teach are really designed, you know, for people that are pretty new with photography. A lot of people that go out, you know, they get a DSLR camera. It's a nice one. And but they keep shooting the pictures on the auto mode. And so, you know, that's where you basically just point the camera, push the button, it takes the picture. So what they've got there is basically an expensive point-and-shoot camera. And, you know, if you'll notice when you take pictures with it on the auto mode and in the point-and-shoot mode that, you know, your pictures will come out pretty good, but quite often you'll be maybe a little disappointed in how they look. And then, you know, the next step really once you fool around with it is to learn how to set the camera on the manual mode so that you as the photographer understand how to set the aperture and the shutter speed manually. And that gives you such a creative control over how the image is going to look. It's really, really the beginning to moving your photography to the next level. And so that's the kind of thing I teach in my photography classes is, you know, how to get into the manual mode and really be able to control aperture and shutter speed so that you can have depth of field and, you know, you can do all sorts of cool things with water and waterfalls. It's just so exciting, you know, what you can do when you're shooting the manual mode.
Yeah, that's great. And do you ever get anybody signing up for your classes that they just want to show up to meet you?
No, celebrity status? I don't think I'm quite that far along yet. Like, but that's funny. No, but I have people that have heard of me and seen my stuff. I mean, I've been here in the Sketch Valley now for 11 years, taking pictures and, you know, maybe 4 years now teaching the classes. So, you know, that's the other fun thing about photography is just that you get to meet a lot of cool people, people that like the outdoors, people that are passionate about, you know, where we live. And I mean, that's just awesome. You know, I just make so many friends and meet so many cool people doing this. That's just really, really awesome.
Okay, that's great. All right, well, what got you into hiking?
Well, I'm from the East Coast. I was born in New York, and then I grew up in, you know, near New York City and North Jersey, and then near Philadelphia and southeastern Pennsylvania. And I had a buddy that I lived with in Jersey that called me after I'd moved away and told me that he'd just gotten back from a program called Outward Bound. And Outward Bound's a if you haven't heard of it, it's been around for a while. It's an outdoor wilderness survival training program. Initially, it was set up really for teenagers, but now they have classes all over the world, you know, all ages and so forth. But back then, this was in the 70s, he had just gotten back. And I don't know why. I mean, my family was never into the outdoors or backpacking or camping. I never really camped very much. But he just started to tell me about being up on a mountain ridge and seeing the clouds from the storm roll in. And something captivated me about it. So I got my parents to sign me up. And the next summer, I rode the Greyhound bus out to Boise, Idaho, and spent 30 days in the Sawtooth Wilderness area outside of Boise doing mountain climbing, rock climbing, backpacking. And man, it was hard. You know, I was a little overwhelmed with it. But, you know, when you're 16, you can adapt pretty quick physically. So by the time, you know, it was over, I was in shape and I was pretty stoked about the whole thing. So that just got me interested. And I didn't have a camera on that trip, but I just was really into backpacking. It gave me a purpose. And a year or two later, me and my buddies from back there, we hitchhiked out to Oregon and we hiked through the whole state of Oregon on the Pacific Crest Trail from Cascade Locks down to Crater Lake and had a great time. And you know, it's just the wilderness, the outdoors, the mountains have just been a part of my life ever since. So, and then photography just goes along with it. I mean, you go to a cool place, you know, heck, you want to have a camera. You want to be able to capture images that, you know, really help you really convey the look and feel of what it was like when you were there. And so that's been like an ongoing goal of mine, you know, as to how to use the camera and how to edit the pictures so that they really look, you know, how I remember it looked when I was there.
Yeah, that's great. So were you hiking with a camera back then?
Yeah, on the trip along the Pacific Crest Trail, yep, I had an old Nikon Nikromat, you know, 35 millimeter film camera.
Oh, yeah. I remember my dad had one of those. So what about, so you've been on a crazy amount of hikes in your area. What's your favorite day hike?
Well, you know, I don't like day hiking all that much. I mean, I do it some, you know, Sauk Mountain I do, but, you know, for me, photography in the mountains is about sunrise and sunset. And so, you know, day hikes are a little problematic. I mean, I'd rather hike up Sauk Mountain with my pack and tent and, you know, catch the sunset there at the top and then wake up in the morning, get the sunrise, and then, you know, hike down and go have breakfast in the valley somewhere. I mean, it just, of course, it's a little work to schlep all your stuff up there, but, you know, your opportunities for getting great pictures is just much better. So, you know, when I'm out, you know, sometimes I'll do, for example, the Maple, the Lake Ann Maple Pass loop off of Highway 20 at Rainy Pass as a day hike, but that's probably my favorite day hike right there is, you know, it's a 7 mile loop, about 2,500 foot elevation gain. And, I'll try to do that like in the fall where I'll get to the trailhead as late as 3 o'clock so that, you know, I get sunset at the top. And then sometimes I'm hiking in the dark on the way, the last little bit down to the parking lot. But, if I'm, you know, day hiking, someplace, I generally leave late in the day to get there so that I get the sunset at the top and then hike out.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, that's a good hike. You know, that hike comes up so often in this podcast. That's got to be one of the top hikes in the whole state.
Well, it's so easy to get to. I mean, you know, you don't have to drive on any dirt roads. It's dog friendly. Not that I have a dog, but I think that's one of the reasons that a lot of people like it. You don't need a permit. And then the scenery up there is just fantastic. I mean, the wildflowers in July, the larch in October, you know, it's like really awesome.
A little bit of everything, yeah. So what about your overnight hike? What's been your favorite?
Well, I mean, I think that the Sahali Glacier Camp is really one of the best campsites in the United States, probably one of the top 50 campsites in the world. I mean, it is an unbelievable place to camp and spend the night with only one with only one caveat to that, as long as the weather's nice. I've camped there many times, probably 20 times I've camped there. I've camped there 4 or 5 times when there was a storm in there, and it's brutal. You're not going to sleep very much. It's so windy. The tent's flapping like crazy. But if you're out there when you get some clear skies, maybe partly cloudy skies, the sunrise and the sunset are spectacular. You know, you look out from the camp, and you can see all the way south to Mount Rainier. The camp is frequently visited by mountain goats that come and hang out at the camp, and you can take the picture. The, you know, the camp itself is situated atop 3 mounds of glacial rubble, which were deposited from the Sahali Glacier right at the base of Sahali Peak. And the Park Service has built these little campsites, like they put turrets of stone around the tent pads. And, you know, there's no trees. There's a pit toilet, sort of like a box toilet that they have there that's off to the side of the camp. And, you know, you can sit there and do your business, and you can see Mount Rainier from where you're sitting. It's just a cool space. There's lots of water there, so you don't need to haul water up to the top. And it's a hell of a hike to get up to it. It's 6 miles and about 4,000 feet elevation gain. So, but the hike in is just glorious, especially when you get up on Sahali Arm. There's wildflowers, like I said, there's mountain goats, there's a view. Oh my God, that is like the coolest. And you have to get a permit, it's in the park. And it's good that they have a permit system or the place would be flooded. But that is absolutely, I think, one of the most spectacular campsites I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, and just to explain the permit process, so it works out real good for us local boys because You know, you have to get it in 2 days in advance. No, you can't get it any further out than that, or any sooner, because really they fill up so quick too. So, you know, if you're looking for a permit, you gotta jump on that and get up there.
Well, what you can do is, for example, if you're going to go on Saturday night, instead of trying to get your permit Saturday morning, you can tool up to the permit station in Marble Mount, get there at 7 a.m. on Friday morning, and you can get the permit for Saturday. And I've never been to do that where I failed to get the permit. But if you show up there at 7 a.m. on Saturday morning, there's probably already a line of like 15 people there trying to get the permit for Saturday night.
And everybody else already got it on Friday.
Yeah, well, for the local guys, right?
Yeah, that's what makes it easier for us.
Yeah.
I got the permit one time, and it was absolutely pouring down rain, so I didn't even bother to go up. So I'm going to try again this year.
Oh, yeah, do not go. It is so exposed. I've been up there a few times in heavy rainstorms. I was up there in 40-mile-an-hour winds, and it's not a place. I mean, I'm not just joking. I mean, it's dangerous up there. And if a lightning storm came in, you know, you couldn't be more exposed.
Yeah, for sure. I've seen your pictures. What's the scariest trip you've been on or experience you've had on the trail?
You know, I saw that question and I've thought about it for a while, and you know, I don't really have any scary experiences. I mean, for me, you know, I see bears quite a bit when I'm hiking, and that's not scary for me. I'm usually tagging along after the bear, trying to get it to stop and let me get close so I can take its picture. So the bears aren't worrisome for me. I've been in some places where there was lightning storms. And again, maybe I'm just a fool, but it was just another photo opportunity as far as I was concerned. So, you know, the only thing that ever happened to me in the mountains at all that was a little unpleasant was is interesting. It was last year when I did a hike up to Sahali Camp, and I got up to the top, and it was one of those days last summer where it was so hot. And in the morning, I woke up and I started to feel sick, and I couldn't understand what the heck was making me so sick. I started the hike down the trail, and you know, I almost passed out. I was in such pain. I'd never been in such pain in my life, and I couldn't drink. I was felt like I was going to, you know, throw up or just fall down on the trail. Finally got back. And anyway, in the end, I went to the hospital and I had kidney stones. So I basically managed to pass the kidney stones on the hottest day last summer, hiking down from Sahali Camp with my pack and totally dehydrated. So
wow, that's unimaginable.
Oh, God. That was bad.
Wow.
You know, and then when I got to the doctor, they said, yeah, it already passed. So I was like, okay. So anyhow, but, you know, other than that, there's nothing about the mountains or being out there that's, you know, scary to me. I mean, people ask me about it. They'll say to you, you know, oh, my gosh, do you take a gun? And I'm like, no, why would I take a gun? Well, there's people there. And I'm like, all the crazy people are down in the valley.
Yeah, they're in the city, yeah.
They're in the city, you know. They're not, like, hanging out up here in the mountains. And, you know, so, I mean, if I was going to do backpacking in Alaska or Glacier National Park in Montana where there's grizzly bears, I would certainly, you know, have a much different attitude about bears and about, you know, being safe and so forth. But I'm pretty familiar with, you know, what's up there in the North Cascades and who's there. And I really don't have any worries about that stuff at all.
That's cool, yeah. What about a funny story?
Oh, man. You know, one of the things that people that don't go up to the North Cascades quite a bit, they might not know this about the mountain goats, is the mountain goats come to the campsites in the high country. And the basic reason they come to the campsite is because they're salt starved. They don't get enough salt somehow in their diet. And wherever a camper pees on the ground is a pretty special salt lick for the goat, which that sounds a little gross maybe, but that's just the deal. And so the goats will come up to the campsite. They'll come over and they kind of stand there sort of looking at you like, you know, So, dude, don't you gotta pee?
No.
Maybe now? Want to pee now? And they kind of like hang out until you go over to the rocks and pee on the ground. And then they come over and, you know, they start licking it up, which, of course, is a great photo op. But it's just a little funny sometimes. The goats, you know, they're like trucking around. They're like watching you, keeping an eye on you and stuff. And it just makes me laugh, you know. They're just so funny, the goats. But it, you know, it works out well photographically because then, you know, you can circumnavigate the goat and he's busy and, you know, you can great pic. He's like posing there. Do you know what I mean? In front of mountains. I've got some great pictures of the goats up there and they're very friendly. You know, I've never felt any threat or danger from them. And, you know, they're just there, doing their thing and, you know, hanging out. And, so that's kind of funny, I think.
That is good. Yeah. You're creating a salt lake for them.
Yeah.
And that's important too, something that they try to teach is to pee on the rocks, not on the dirt, right?
Yeah, you're supposed to pee on the rocks up there at the Sahali camp, and they don't want you to pee in the pit toilet. That's for pooping. And so, you know, that works out fine. And but the mountain goats, I've seen quite a bit of them in the enchantments as well. Sometimes you'll see families of goats and goats with baby goats, and they're just, you know, so cute, right? So fun to take pictures of, and, you know, that's about it. I mean, I've seen bears, I've seen goats, I've seen a fisher once, you know, a small, of course, I've seen marmots tons of times. And, you know, there's some cool wildlife up there.
Oh, for sure. What about the 10 essentials? Do you always carry those or do you have your own list?
No, I mean, I you know, certainly have the 10 essentials. I mean, I've got a tent, a sleeping bag, fire starter, food, stove, you know, extra clothes, a map. I don't do a GPS in the mountains. You know, when you hike on the trails, you know, in the North Cascade National Park, you know, you hardly even need a map. I mean, I always bring one. I have a Green Trails maps. I do stuff with Green Trails. They have great maps, by the way. So I'll bring the maps. And, you know, what I generally find is more helpful is I'll photocopy the trail description from one of the trail guides. My favorite North Cascade trail guide is from Falcon Press. The author is Eric Molvar, and his description of the trails in the North Cascades I found to be by far the most accurate for the long backcountry trips there. He has great details of the campsites, where to find water, the flora and fauna, and some authors I found sometimes they get a little bit maybe over promote the beauty of an area. And, you know, they'll say it's the best and this and that and all these superlatives and you get there and it's cool. But, with the Mr. Molvar, I found that his descriptions fit perfectly, what I found to be the case when I arrived in the places. And I love his book. So anyway, what I'll do is I'll photocopy, you know, the pages of that particular part of the trail that I'm going to hike on. And I find that, you know, that's actually in some ways more helpful for me than the map. I'll be pulling those out and reading them, you know, more than I'll be looking at the map. So, you know, I've never gotten lost in the mountains. I mean, the only time I ever I did get lost once when I was trying to sort of circumnavigate Mount Hood in June, and the upper trails were all covered with snow. I got a bit lost for a few hours once, but that was it. So, yeah, always carry, you know, when I go on a day hike, if I go to Sauk Mountain, for example, on a day hike, I don't always carry the 10 essentials. I mean, there's going to be another 150 people on the trail there with me. And, you know, I know if something happens, you know, somebody's going to be around. So I don't worry much about it.
Yep, that's a good point. And I like the reference on the book, too. That's, I haven't heard anybody bring up that author yet, so that's great. What about, let's see. Oh, so on a day hike, then when you're just going up to Sauk or whatever, you don't have the 10 essentials. What do you bring for food?
You know, I usually just bring bars. You know, I was in the Cliff Bars for a while, and then I was into the Pro Bars, they call them. And, you know, I'll bring a sandwich. I'll bring some, you know, just water, a sandwich, and that's it. So, you know, when I'm just going on a day hike, I can kind of, you know, have fancier food.
Yeah, for sure. What about your hiking footwear and socks? What do you wear for that?
You know, I've gone through I'm from the little bit of the old school on backpacking, where, you know, you have to have a big, heavy, thick leather boot that came well above your ankle to backpack in, and, you know, it was supposed to be, you know, imperative that you wore one of those. And I've migrated away from that. You know, I'm hiking in the North Cascades. I'm not doing bushwhacking very much. I don't do much scrambling. I'm just following the trail. And so the shoes that I wear now are very lightweight. They're not sneakers, of course. They're lightweight hiking shoes. They're low cut, and I wear, you know, light socks. I have a thin pair of REI light wool socks that I wear, and that's it. I you know, tie them loose, and I find that for me, you know, I don't like to do more now than 10 to 12 miles a day when I'm hiking with a big pack, but those generally work out well for me. And you know, if I was going to do any scrambling and really be on some rough terrain, I'm sure I would wear a heavier boot that had more ankle support. But you know, just being on those trails, it works out well for me with just the light shoes and you know, light socks.
Yeah, it seems to be the way most people are going. So I like to ask that question because, you know, I think a lot of people still have that theory of, you know, you have to be in a boot. And, yeah, you know, that's fine. It, you know, it's good to think that way. But definitely a lot of people are changing their ways on that for sure. Now, let's see. What about backpacking? Tell us what's in your pack.
You know, I've, I think like a lot of people, I've gone to the backpacking store. You know, like I was a kid in a candy store in the past and bought, you know, a bunch of cool crap that I could take in my backpack. I had, you know, candle lanterns, and I had some collapsible bucket for water, and, you know, all sorts of stuff. So, you know, for me, I've stripped it down quite a bit. I have a basic first aid kit. You know, I have water bottles. I have a stove. I have the Pocket Rocket MSR stove now. One pot. You know, I have a copper spur UL3 tent, which is a great backpacking tent, very lightweight. And I have an inflatable pad for sleeping, and a sleeping bag, and some clothes, and, you know, not too much else. I really don't bring much else. The only sort of luxury that I'll bring sometimes on a trip is the sleeping pad can fold in half and then slide into a sleeve that creates sort of a chair, sort of a camp chair. And sometimes I'll bring that sleeve with me, you know, to make sort of a backrest sort of chair thing when I'm camping at night. And that's about it. You know, I bring a little bug juice. Of course, some places the bugs are pretty horrific in July, and so I'll definitely bring some DEET or some, what's that one, the eucalyptus oil, bug juice. And for food, you know, I'll usually have a freeze-dried dinner, oatmeal for breakfast, and then, who knows, maybe some hard cheese, some sausage, some crackers, you know, different things like that for lunch.
Yeah, I can remember bringing some cheese last year on the trail, and my wife just couldn't believe I was going to bring cheese up. I think, no, this is great. Yeah, like you say, as long as you got the right cheese.
Yep.
Oh, that's cool. That's good. Yeah, that copper spur, I believe I've seen a picture of that before up at Sahali, right?
Yeah.
That's your picture in the tent there?
Yeah, that's a great great tent. It's less than 4 pounds. You can put 3 people in it. It's certainly great for 2 people because then there's plenty of room between the 2 sleeping bags to, you know, put your backpack and all your stuff inside the tent. So very lightweight. Very sturdy tent, you know, not something you'd really want to be camping when it snowed a lot, but, you know, it's a 3-season tent, but really, really great tent.
Yeah, I've got the Copper Spur too, and I think you met me before. It's really one person for me.
Yep. Yeah. No, but it's, you know, the three-person, you know, you can put 3 people in it, but, you know, it's certainly more comfy with 2.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see. What about your clothing? Do you have anything special you wear for that, or just kind of typical hiking gear?
No, typical hiking gear. I have one of those, shirts that wicks the moisture off your skin and dries quickly, and lightweight hiking shorts. Nothing fancy.
And what about rain gear?
You know, I generally, because of my work, I have a great flexibility in terms of when I go hiking. So if I see that it's going to be raining for the next week, I'm not going on a hike. I'm just going to, long backpacking trip. I might do some day hikes, or some short overnights. But I'll just hold off and wait till, the skies look better and the weather forecast is clearer. And then, I'll head out. So sometimes I'll catch some rain. I've done long backpacking trips before where, I was out camping for 4 or 5 days of rain. And basically it sucks, so I've already done that, so I don't need to do that again. And but I just have one rain jacket that I wear, a lightweight sort of inexpensive thing. I mean, rain gear itself can be $300-$500 for just a thing that covers your top, and that's just crazy for me. So I probably got like a $50 raincoat that I bring with me and hope I don't have to use it.
Yeah, and a lot of times those $400 or $500 get-ups, and everybody thinks they're going to be completely dry, and it turns out they're not.
Yeah.
Even after all that, so. How about trail work? Have you done any trail work on the trail?
No, I thought about signing up. I would like to. I've done a lot of donated a lot of images to the Washington Trail Association, their magazine and so forth, and read the magazine. They do great stuff. I really admire them and the people that get out there and do the trail work. And I just haven't made it go right to, get myself and my butt out there and volunteer and help them. But I should, and I really am always very grateful and admire the guys that are out there doing that stuff.
Yeah, cool. What about fires out in the on the trail? Do you ever do fires on your overnights?
When it feels right, when you're in a place where there's, fire pits and there's lots of wood and it's just, the right thing to do, I do it. I've been on backpacking trips through the Pasaten, where, love it over there, hiking through the Pasaten along the Boundary Trail, the Pacific Crest Trail. There's places there where you can camp and have fires, and I will. In the North Cascade National Park, there's some spots that, especially in the lowland valleys where there's designated, places for fires, and sometimes I'll have a fire. I like it. Do you know what I mean? I just got back from a trip to the Olympic Coast, and, to camp out there on the ocean at Point of the Arches or somewhere near Second or Third Beach and have a fire there on the sand is just fantastic, it's not, an imperative for me. And, sometimes you're so tired at the end of the day that just to, fire up the stove and have some food and just relax is, easier than, going through all the stuff to get the wood, get a fire, take care of it and all that.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. And, one of my prior episodes was with, Greg Johnston. I don't know if you've heard of him before. He wrote a book about camping and hiking and exploring the Pacific Coast. So, yeah, it inspired me to get out there for sure. It's beautiful out there.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many cool places to go on the coast there, and Olympic Peninsula is just, a whole nother world.
All right, well, we already covered your photography, but I did have one other question. When you do go out, do you ever go out by yourself, with your, just take some quick shots and stuff, or do you typically like to hike in a group?
I'm happy to go out by myself. I've never gone on like a week long or 10-day backpacking trip by myself. Not that I wouldn't, but it's fun to have somebody to come along. I have one close friend that's come with me on a lot of the long trips. He lives down near Olympia, and then I've got other. Now that I've met more people through photography, I'll talk to other people that will go on other trips with me now. And it's fun to take people for the first time into the backcountry. So if somebody's interested to go that hasn't been, I have a lot of equipment I can lend people, and it's fun to go with others. And on some of the longer trips, it's better for me to go with somebody that that has experience, that, you know, knows what to expect, and somebody that I can count on. And, you know, when you choose somebody to hike with, it's important also to, you know, that your pace in terms of how far you want to hike each day and how fast you hike, that you have similar, you know, abilities, goals, et cetera, about that. I'm not a particularly fast hiker. Sometimes I'll carry, you know, 30, 40, 50 pounds with me. And, you know, like I said, 10, 12, 15 miles a day is good as far as I'm concerned. Less is all right, too. you know, I'm more interested in getting to a good place to camp so that I have a, you know, great sunset, a night sky, and then sunrise pictures in the morning. To me, that's more important than trying to, you know, just hit a target in terms of how many miles I need each day. So, you know, a lot of the day hikes, you know, even though you, quote, go by yourself, you're never by yourself.
Yeah.
You know, for example, that Maple Pass loop, I mean, you know, there might be 80 to 100 cars there in the parking lot in the summer just for that loop alone.
That's wild, yeah. What about Leave No Trace?
Well, you know, of course, I've been following that for, gosh, I mean, 40 years now. You know, you don't take any garbage. You don't leave anything there. You just take pictures and leave footprints. And so I've been a firm follower of that. And, you know, I think people generally are pretty good. You know, when I'm out in the backcountry, really the only place I'll ever see any garbage or stuff left is, you know, when you have campsites near the highway.
Right.
But I think people that are backpackers, you know, I think are pretty conscientious about that. And, you know, it's cool. That's the way it should be. You don't want to, you know, you one of the reasons for going backpacking is to, you know, escape civilization and people and have solitude and, you know, seeing trash and all that stuff is not cool. So I've packed out other people's trash before and certainly always pack out my own.
Yeah, that's good. What about a future hiking goal? Do you have a spot you really haven't been to that you definitely want to get out to?
Well, I've got some places along the Sawtooth Ridge up near Twisp that I want to do in October, you know, for the larches. I've got some other areas of the Pisatin Wilderness I'd like to hike to. You know, those are really the main things. I mean, further afield, you know, I wouldn't mind doing part of the John Muir Trail in California. And I've been to South America before, many years ago, to do backpacking and climbing, but, you know, wouldn't mind heading back down there. And, but, you know, whether I make it to any of those other places or not, it doesn't really mean that much to me. I'm just happy to be here in the North Cascades. You know, a lot of the trails that I've been on before, I'm excited to go on them again, along Copper Ridge up to Whatcom Pass, over in the Pisatin to Sahali Camp. You know, one of the most beautiful hikes in the North Cascade National Park is up to a place called the North Fork of Bridge Creek. It's a 17-mile hike, one way to get into it, but it's a dead-end trail. It's a fantastic spot there at the base of Mount Logan and Storm King. Just fantastic views.
And that's the one, there's a waterfall there, right?
Yep. It's all waterfalls. There used to be a campsite there at the end of the trail that was called Many Waterfalls Camp.
Huh.
And the campsite's not there now, but, I mean, just some glorious places to get to. And I'm just happy to go back and luxuriate in the beauty of it. So, you know, I've been at this for a while, and now I'm just, you know, I found my home up here in the North Cascades, and I'm happy with it.
That's great. Well, before we get into the final questions that I didn't warn you about first, what's your website, and how do people get a hold of you on social media?
The website is Andy Porter Images. That's it, andyporterimages.com. So you'll go there and you'll see right away a link where you can buy prints. So all the different prints I have, the images I have are for sale. My favorite medium for producing prints is on canvas. So although you can buy fine art, you know, photo paper prints on my site, a lot of what you'll see there is canvas wrap prints, both framed and, you know, with wooden frames around them. On the outside, of course, all canvas wraps, the canvas is wrapped around a frame of wood, but So I have different sizes, and I get my work done at a lab in North Carolina that does fantastic work. Really, really nice colors, great pictures. So you'll also find on my website information about the classes I teach and the photo tours. And I also write articles about, for example, how to take night sky pictures, how to edit pictures. And those are on the blog page, which is connected to the website. So that's my main site. I have a Facebook page, which is Andy Porter Photography. And so there, you know, I'll just post the random stuff that I'm doing on a regular basis and where I'm going to hike. Sometimes I'll invite people, anybody that's interested to come, to tag along. And then I have a site on Flickr. I post pictures on the, you know, Flickr's a Yahoo site, a photo sharing site. And so I've been on Flickr for 15 years. I probably have about 3,000 pictures there. And so that's another site. And then I have yet one more. I have a blog page, which is northwesternimages.wordpress.com, where I write more lengthy stories about trips I've been on, experiences I've had, and get more into detail about, you know, writing about things as opposed to just pictures. So those are the four sites where you can find me, and that's it. This summer marks the, this year actually marks the 100th anniversary of the National Park Service. And I'm proud that I'll be working with the North Cascade National Park to teach some classes about photography, to do some night sky training for people free through the North Cascade National Park. And if you go to the North Cascade National Park website, you can probably find more information about that. So I love the North Cascade National Park. I love the Park Service. Those guys do a great job taking care of the parks. And it's really one of the coolest things about the United States is that we have these wonderful, you know, resources of national park. And, you know, I'm just really happy to help out any way I can with those guys.
Yeah, that's great. And I'm going to put links to all that in the show notes, too, in case people don't want to write that down. They can just go straight there. And real quick, too, you know, speaking of going to your site and buying some of your work, what is your favorite picture, one of your favorite top two, three pictures that you've taken?
Oh, God. People ask that. It's one of those things like somebody asked you, what's your favorite song, you know? I mean, you know, your favorite song today might not be your favorite song in, you know, a year from now, right? That it changes. Over the last couple of years, I've become very enamored with taking night sky pictures. So, you know, my coolest night sky picture recently from this year was a picture I shot on the Olympic coast at First Beach. And I got a great picture of the night sky in front of a gigantic piece of driftwood that's just, I mean, it's huge. And so that's really one of my favorite pictures now. And, you know, some of the pictures I've gotten at Sahali Camp are really some of my other favorite pictures. So I would say the night sky pictures and then the Sahali pictures. I got a great night sky picture also last year, camped along the Baker River. We recruited two of his friends, and we all went camping, and I set up a tent just for them, the three kids, and got a great shot of the tent, the three kids in the tent, the Milky Way, great shot of the Milky Way over the tent, and then you can see the boys sitting in the tent illuminated by one of them brought an iPad. So the iPad is illuminating their faces there sitting in the tent below the Milky Way. And that's a pretty cool picture. I really like that shot a lot.
That sounds good. I'm going to check that out. All right. Do you have anything you wanted to plug or talk about that we didn't mention before I asked the last questions?
No. I mean, you know, one of the things that people will sometimes ask me about, it comes up certainly when I do my photography training, is photo editing. I edit my pictures with Photoshop. I don't use Lightroom or Elements. I use the regular Photoshop. I've been at Photoshop for about 10 years. I'm self-taught. Photo editing is an important part of photography. You know, the fact is that the human eye can perceive a lot more than the camera can record. And so if you want the picture to look like it was when you saw the scene, then in a lot of cases you're going to have to Photoshop it a bit. You're going to have to make the brightest part of the picture darker and the darkest part of the picture brighter. And so I spend a fair amount of time editing pictures and learning advanced skills on how I can edit them better. Certainly, I'll be the first one to say that, you know, all night sky pictures that you see online have been edited extensively. And so not a little bit, but a lot. And my other pictures, I edit a little bit. The night sky ones, I edit a lot. So, you know, that's fun. I didn't like doing it in the beginning. I curse Photoshop quite a bit in the beginning. But, you know, it's just a big part of being a photographer. And, you know, it's one of the things that I teach in the classes as well. And, you know, you just got to get over it and get into it and learn how to do it. And then it's fun. So that's it. I don't really have anything else to bring up. Just, you know, happy trails. Get out. Enjoy yourself. That's what it's really about. And, you know, let's take care of as much of the wilderness here in Washington as we can and protect it. And, you know, so it'll be around for many generations to come.
For sure. And I'd like to note on the editing thing, too, that, you know, even everybody, there's a ton of people that are just taking iPhone pictures and, you know, taking the time just to add, you know, to bring out the color and stuff in those is really worth it, too.
Absolutely.
So editing, you know, editing makes it look so much better. So
it's the time of the podcast that we ask our guests some questions. They don't know these questions. They've never heard them before. So let's see what they have to answer. But first, let's talk about Cascade Hiker hats and bumper stickers. Go to CascadeHikerPodcast.com. Check out the hats and bumper stickers. Support the podcast. You can also donate. There's a donate button on each of our show notes. Go there. Find pictures of our guests. Now enjoy the rest of the show.
All right. What piece of gear do you consider not replaceable besides your camera? Something that you bring, maybe people think you're weird. Might be your chair sleeve or something.
Oh gosh. You know, I'm just a minimalist on all that stuff. I don't really have anything special that I have to have, you know, just the essentials. I mean, water bottles, tent, sleeping bag and all that stuff. I mean, I really don't have anything to add to the list there.
Okay. Yeah. Do you take alcohol hiking?
No, generally not. You know, I'm a little beyond the alcohol age. I used to, you know, do some of that stuff to, you know, get a buzz when I was out there. But that's been many years since I've done that. So, you know, at I'm getting up there a little bit. So, no, I don't. I'm good. I might have some pain pills, but other than that, I'm fine.
Yeah, good, good. Yeah, I think a lot of people just kind of consider, oh, we're going out in the woods. You should probably bring some alcohol. And I don't think as many people do that. As, you know, think they should. Do you filter all of your water on the trail?
Well, you know, this is another thing that I'll probably get in trouble for, but no, I don't actually. You know, depending upon where I go, if I'm at, for example, at Sahali Camp and I'm camped at the base of a glacier and there's the glacier and it's melting and I just drink right out of the stream. If I'm on, you know, Mount Baker and same thing, I'm on the glacier or near it, then I don't filter it. If I'm somewhere where there's much between me and the glacier, then yep, I do. I have the kind of filter where you scoop water into a bag and then gravity just pulls it through the filter and I drink like that. But, you know, I don't always filter it.
Cool. What about trekking poles?
Always have trekking poles. I swear by them. You know, once you get used to them, they're cool for coming down, you know, for your knees and, taking care of your back and so you don't fall down and stuff. The trekking poles are a godsend,
especially when you have a kidney stone. Huh?
Well, that was just crazy. I mean, I can't even believe that. So no, but the trekking poles are really, really cool, especially for the downhill stuff. Really help you regain your balance, maintain your balance, and you know, they really save a lot of wear and tear on the joints.
Yeah, for sure. What about hiking books? Not necessarily guides, but anything, maybe even some books, photography books or something. Do you have any recommendations?
Not really. You know, what I've done, you know, when I was learning about photography and Photoshop and so forth, I'd head up to a bookstore, maybe at Barnes & Noble, and, you know, just hang out for a while and try to learn a little bit at a time. I learned a lot online. about photography, watching tutorials and so forth. And it's one of those things, it's hard for me to study out of a book. You know, I good for me to like learn a little bit and then go practice it and then go back and learn a little more. So don't really have any great recommendations there on books.
What about photographers?
Well, I mean, I just go and I look online. I look at Flickr, for example. The Flickr has a thing every day that's called Explore. And, you know, you can see fantastic, the best pictures from the whole world are basically put up there every day. And, you know, I'll go and I'll get inspiration from looking at other people's work. Sometimes I pay attention to who it is, but more often than not, I don't care who took the picture. I'm just looking for ideas. Sometimes I'll see a picture that's just stunning to me. I start drooling on the keyboard and, you know, I want to figure out, it motivates me. I want to figure out, how did the person take the picture? How did they get the lighting like that? How do they make the picture have that feel to it? And so then that, you know, motivates me to go try to find out, you know, how I can do it and so forth. So, you know, I get motivated a lot just by looking at random people's pictures and, you know, it just love it, you know what I mean? Just to see what people can do, and it's fun.
For sure. Let's see, if you could choose one person to hike with, maybe they're alive, maybe they're not, maybe they're famous, maybe they're not, who would it be and why?
Oh, one person to hike with. I mean, my favorite person to hike with is my friend that lives down near Olympia. His name is M. Saval, and he is the craziest, funnest person I've ever hiked with. He has a great sense of humor. You can talk about anything, and you just spend most of your time laughing.
That's good.
With him. So, you know, laughter is a great thing to have when you're out backpacking, especially when it gets tough. And I don't have any historical figure that I wanted to hike with or something. I don't really think about stuff like that. I wouldn't mind talking to a bunch of people, but, you know, whether I'd want to hike with them or not, I'm not sure.
Okay, last question. Do you listen to any hiking podcasts?
No.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming on the Cascade Hiker Podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. It was fun. I hope that I did okay. You know, it's fun to talk about this stuff, and it's a beautiful day. I'm looking forward. I'm going to head up to the Diablo Overlook on Highway 20 tonight with some people, and we're going to take some night sky pictures. It's the new moon, and it's supposed to be clear, so I'm all excited. I'm going to get all geared up and ready to go later this evening.
That's awesome. Hey, thanks so much for listening to the show. Go on back to CascadeHikerPodcast.com and, you know, leave me a comment. Tell me what you thought. That's how I know everything's going good, or maybe some things are going bad. But maybe you have some ideas there. And if you have some more questions for any of our guests, leave a comment under their episode, and maybe we can get them back on and answer some quick questions there. You could send me an email if you don't want to leave a comment. It's ibighiker@gmail, ibighiker@gmail. Give my Facebook page a like, North Cascade Hiker. Follow me on Twitter, @N_CascadeHiking. That's @N_CascadeHiking. I try to give you guys multiple ways to get a hold of me. Give me some comments on the show, and maybe some ideas for some guests. Thanks again for listening to the show. Here's a little bit more of that Whiskey Fever track, Tall Grass.
You were sweet like honey on a heartbeat. You were fine like wine in the sunshine. I could feel you coming on strong. Could never be wrong, could never be wrong. See her laying down in the tall grass, playing mandolin in a white dress. So come running when I hear that song. It could never be wrong, it could never be wrong. Where you wanna run, baby, I'll run too. I would leave this world for a beautiful girl if I could just find.